Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
But when we think about the next opportunities, for specifically in artificial intelligence, we know we have real competition when it comes to China. And what we've seen when it comes to China's investments in AI is that they have enormous access to data. And more data, they are mining more data than we are able to compete with right now.
USDA Deputy Secretary Sochil Torres-Small.
And so that's why investments in, and specifically NIFA investments and ARS investments in data sets are fundamental to be able to provide that. Because as the United States government, we have an enormous opportunity because we own so much of those data sets. But being able to put them in a usable way where data can be analyzed and then used and then applied for a farmer's benefit is going to be crucial to be able to continue to innovate in the future.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
According to the U.S. government, GDP grew at an annual rate of 3.0%. That information released on Thursday morning. Same time that jobless claims were announced, the initial jobless claims number for the week, 231,000, a little less than the trade expectation, but continuing jobless claims at 1.868 million. Also on Thursday, U.S. goods trade balance released by the government. Now, the record for our trade balance or imbalance, where we import more than we export, is $121 billion. That's set back in March of 2022. Now, for many, many years, we had a positive trade balance, but that all changed in March of 1971. And since that time, we've never been back to a positive trade balance for the general economy. The number out on Thursday was $102.7 billion negative. That's the widest in 2 years. What about ag? The ag trade imbalance, we now import 42.5 billion more than we export. At least that's what USDA projects for 2025. Housing starts, they're lowest since 2000, and interest rates are climbing, which is putting pressure in the timber industry, and lumber falling to $490 per thousand board feet. Even with ample supply, there's lower demand. And standing timber right now in Arkansas is double what it was in 1978. Well, the Energy Information Administration, or EIA, is projecting higher crude and natural gas production in the Permian Basin. Now, we're getting more from fewer rigs. That actually started happening in late 2022. Now, in 2023, Permian Basin had more active rigs than the rest of the lower 48 states. Now, new rigs brought online are producing on average 433,000 barrels per day. That's crude. For nat gas, the production is 780 million cubic feet per day. Now, what do we do with it once we pull it out of the ground? Well, for crude, the Gray Oak Pipeline is set to be installed and running in late 2025. For Nat Gas, there's a 580-mile Matterhorn Express pipeline, which runs from Midland, Odessa, in Texas, down to the Houston area. And finally, Campbell's Soup, forecasting annual sales above Wall Street expectations after price hikes and increased consumer demand. Inflation actually leading to demand. Price of a condensed tomato soup, 10.75 ounces, first sold in 1898 for less than a dime. By 2003, we were paying 50 cents for that can, a dollar in 2021, and now $1.30 per can. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Earlier this spring, I got to participate in a land-grant institution college tour where I went across the country and visited with students who are the next generation of agriculture.
USDA Deputy Secretary Sochil Torres-Small at a Senate Ag Appropriations Subcommittee field hearing.
And in one of those formats, I had a woman ask me a question that says, she asked, what distinguishes American ag research? And for me, what distinguishes American ag research is the direct connection to application through extension, through the way that ARS and NIFA across the board partner with farmers, work to show that what we are researching has a direct application to support farmers, feed the country, and feed the world. We are able to target that work intentionally. After that conversation, I learned that that woman was visiting from China, which underscores how other countries are looking at what we are doing with research and trying to outpace us. And as Senator Smith recognized, we are certainly facing that challenge when it comes to funding for agriculture research. When we look at 2002 being the time when we reached our peak, and in 2019 being in a place where we're at the same funding levels as we were in the 1970s. We know that other countries are attempting to outpace us to take on this work that we have done in the past.
And when she breaks down public ag research,
first, it's about the work. When you look at precision agriculture and unique relationships and partnerships, such as this cooperative agreement with Grand Farms, when you look at the opportunities in precision agriculture that then are multiplied by opportunities in artificial intelligence and data, we know there are real chances to expand farm income and invest in farmers. But it's also about investing in the facilities. And you'll hear from Undersecretary Jacobs Young about the 90-plus facilities that ARS operates. The impact that you have when you come to a college and you're trying to figure out what to major in, and you're looking at the medical facility and you're looking at the ag research facility, and that might influence what you think is going to be the most prosperous opportunities for you and your family. And then it's about investing in people. It's about that relationship, those collaborations that we saw here today, that when we are connected to farmers, when we are connected to private sector and nonprofit sector, we're able to best expand our research opportunities. I think one way to show that was a recent conversation I had with a generational farm. It talked about the advancements of each successive generation. And the grandfather was the one who purchased the land and got the first tractor. The father invested in water tiling and water technologies for managing control. The son called himself a soil scientist, recognizing that investments in precision agriculture, being able to save on the cost of inputs like fertilizer through directed application, make a world of difference and allow him to continue his farm into the future. But it will also allow us to continue to advance United States agriculture across the world. One of the last conversations I had at a land-grant institution was a researcher who said it had always been his dream to work at USDA. And the reason why is because he was an immigrant from India. And he grew up receiving USDA commodities as support for nutrition. And so getting the chance to now come here and contribute to the research that continues to feed the world gave him purpose every single day. So those are the many reasons why agriculture and investments in research are fundamental to who we are as a nation and fundamental to the opportunity of people, all the people sitting in this room, to make sure that we can continue farming into the future for generations, for whatever new innovations will come.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This is a great event that's held annually.
Sherry Vinton is the Director of Agriculture for Nebraska, talking about a recent Nebraska Ag and Economic Summit in Kearney.
What's a little bit new is during the pandemic, we started holding it together with economic development. And if you think about it, agriculture and economic development go together like peas and carrots, and it's been a smashing success. This year, we've had more people in attendance than ever. We've had over 600 people here, and there's a lot of buzz about what it's going to take to keep the brain drain from happening in Nebraska. We've talked about housing. We've talked about childcare. We've talked about education. And we've actually talked about the good paying jobs that are going to be created by the bioeconomy and by selling Nebraska's commodity crops as value added products.
Now, we hear it said a lot, but what is a bioeconomy?
You know, in my mind as director of agriculture, the bioeconomy is nothing new. It's what farmers and ranchers have always done. We've always used our resources in the most efficient manner that we can to raise a needed and necessary crop. But in this new world, for everybody else, the bioeconomy is taking our commodities and making it into all the things that people need in a renewable and sustainable fashion.
Recently was part of a trade mission to Indonesia.
We had a wonderful trip to Indonesia. We had over 20 people with us representing all segments of agriculture, industry, and education. Of course, some of our biggest exports are going to be soybeans, distillers' grains, and beef to Indonesia. We were very fortunate. We met with feed mills. We met with the university there. And we had a gentleman with us from Halal Transactions of Omaha, and that's a new requirement, not just for beef, but for all products going into Indonesia that are going to be required coming in October this year. And he's actually the largest certifier in the United States of America. So this is a great opportunity for Nebraska to sell products there. There's over 280 million people in Indonesia, and they're a very young demographic with growing income. And that's why we're strategically targeting that country. We have great trading partners in Japan and Korea, Mexico and Canada. But as we've learned with some of our other trading partners, you don't want to be reliant on any one country too much.
We might think we know, but what do Indonesians really want to know?
They're very interested in how our crops are produced. They're actually very interested in being sustainable themselves. They want to know what our production methods are like, what they can learn from us. Indonesia is very interested in a partnership, not just being used as a trading partner. You know, they were colonized many years ago, and so we were celebrating that sort of 70th anniversary of a partnership with this country. So that was a great discussion that we had. They're also very interested in Nebraska soybeans. They're very high quality, and they use them for their tempeh production.
Of course, talking about Nebraska, you can't leave out beef.
I am so excited to say that we have just set a record. We have exported more beef in the first 6 months this year than ever before, and Nebraska is leading the nation in exports, and that's something to say. We've had a strong dollar. You know, beef isn't cheap right now, but there's incredible demand for protein.
Nebraska's Director of Ag, Sherry Vinton. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So historically, we've always had a trade surplus in agriculture.
Betty Resnick is an economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation. She talks about now the recurring ag trade deficit.
We saw our first trade deficit in agriculture in fiscal year 2019. And now they just released data for fiscal year 2025 projections. We're going to be looking at our fifth of 7 years of trade deficits and new records every year. However, I will say that for the most part, we import and we export slightly different agricultural products. So a trade deficit isn't inherently a problem. It's just, you know, numbers, right? But it is important that we have access for our exports and also that our producers can produce in a sustainable way where they can make a profit. And that is having issues right now.
But when we compare imports and exports of ag goods, it's not a zero-sum game.
Yeah, there's a lot of great examples of products that, you know, either people are willing to pay a premium for them overseas, like those cherries, or products, especially in livestock, that we just don't consume here. So a cow is going to have a tongue. Not many Americans eat cow tongue, but people in Asia love it. It's a delicacy. So we can export some of those products overseas that don't have a value here. And that's a win-win for everyone involved.
But what about our current trade agenda? What's happening there?
It's been limited. And frankly, the deals they're working on now, they aren't free trade deals. They're smaller in scope. And at the end of the day, they're not focusing on market access for agricultural products. They have other goals. So free trade agreements have been wonderful for agriculture. We have, and it's also been good for the American consumer. And we would like to see more of them. But like you said, we haven't seen one with a new trade partner in over a decade, since 2012.
So how important is a rule-based trade system?
Yeah, I mean, the trade agreements that allow a dispute settlement like USMCA are really useful because we can use those to get to the bottom of some of our disagreements with other countries. For instance, a great example of that right now is the biotech dispute with Mexico, where they are considering banning, they are banning GMO corn use in tortillas, but also considering banning it in other imports. And we believe that is against our trade deal. It's unscientific. And we have a dispute right now at USMCA with Mexico.
Now, the general economy is somewhat strong, but that's not indicative at all of the ag economy.
Well, I would say the whole economy as a whole is doing pretty well, especially compared to the rest of the world. I mean, we've been chugging along with quarter after quarter of a strong economy, strong job market. The agricultural economy is really struggling right now. Crop prices have returned to 2020 levels, and expenses for farmers have not. So we have increased input costs of about 30% or so, while the prices have dropped about 40% or so in a lot of cases since those highs that came after the war in Ukraine. And that leaves farmers in a really tight spot. We've had a net farm income fall 2 years in a row. One was, I think, 17%. And now this year is forecasted to fall at 25%. So 37% over 2 years. I mean, you can't ask many Americans to cut their paycheck by nearly 40% over 2 years. So farmers are really feeling it right now.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Done a lot of work on biofuels. We have leaders from our corn growers here. You'll hear from shortly. Leaders from our soybean growers here, big up here. And as I work with farmers and ranchers across Minnesota, I'm often reminded of the importance of our foreign trading partners, but also the need to expand our domestic markets when it comes to bioproducts.
Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar at a Senate Ag Appropriations Subcommittee field hearing in Fargo, North Dakota, with USDA Deputy Secretary Sochil Torres-Small.
Senator Ernst and Ricketts and Stabenow and I lead the bill to strengthen the bio-preferred program. Could you talk about, Deputy Secretary Torres-Small, could you talk about what research initiatives have the Ag Research Service and the National Institute of Food and Agriculture undertaken to expand the use of ag commodities in non-food markets?
Thank you so much for your focus on the BioPreferred program, recognizing that as we invest in biofuels and sustainable aviation fuel, we also need to use byproducts to create things like bio-based plastic or bio-based car seats. And recognizing that by diversifying that market, we're able to build the economies of scale necessary to continue that production. When it comes to the work and research that we're doing, NIFA is doubling down in multiple ways. Undersecretary Jacobs-Young mentioned the germplasm, which is also a resource which is also being used to identify and specifically research feedstocks and the ability to make them more usable for non-food-based applications.
Hearing hosted by North Dakota Senator John Hoeven also featured Dr. Shavonda Jacobs-Young, Chief Scientist.
As we go into this farm bill, are there other things that you would recommend that we do to continue to build that paradigm? Starting with Secretary Torres-Small and then Dr. Jacobs-Young.
We've been in close collaboration about the farm bill and recognizing that although currently the majority of funding for NIFA comes through appropriations, there's been conversations across all proposals, whether it's the House version, the Senate version from Senator Stabenow or from Ranking Member Bozeman. All of them recognize the need when it comes to investments in research. One of the challenges when it comes to the Farm Bill is figuring out how to fund it and knowing that we've got to be honest about the numbers that are available and basing that on an appropriate assessment. So as we look to invest, both in facilities, in partnerships, making sure that we have a long-term plan that is based in the
an honest assessment of what money we have available. And I'll turn it over to Undersecretary Jacobs-Doug for additional comments.
Yes, so in addition, and I know we're talking about the Farm Bill, but I want to talk about overall. And having spent 2 years at the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy and been in ag 22 years at USDA, we continue to have the challenge of impressing upon people how high-tech agriculture is, that we are a high-tech, scientifically driven industry. So when we talk about acts, right, whether it's in the Ag Committee or any committee, we should be a part of the conversation. And that we should not have to depend on our cousins to partner with us, that we should be seen as high-tech, scientifically driven, and important for investments.
Did Greg Tevine write some talking points for you? Because I don't know how you could have said that any better.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Yeah, so we had a federal issues forum talking about policies that are going to impact Nebraska.
Nebraska Senator Pete Ricketts.
So we had a panel with former Trump EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler and Shelley Capito talking about regulations, specifically environmental regulations, and how this administration really is driving a lot of their far-left radical policies through regulation, not through lawmaking. We also had a great panel, Adrian Smith moderated, on trade and how important that is for Nebraska's farmers and ranchers. And then we had another panel with Nebraska agribusiness leaders talking again about, really, it came down to the importance of being involved and being engaged to help educate bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. While we certainly have people who are driving a far-left radical agenda in this Biden-Harris administration, there's also just a lot of bureaucrats that have never been to a farm and don't really understand the policies that they're creating and the consequences that that has. So, again, a lot of great panelists, a lot of great conversation. We really hit the ball out of the park with this one.
One major issue that Congress has got to deal with, federal spending.
One of the things that we're talking about is just how our federal spending is out of control. Here in Nebraska, when I was governor, we kept the growth of government to about 2.8% a year, and our revenues grew at 4% a year. So that allowed us to make investments and also provide tax relief. Well, in Washington, we are running up the credit card bills at an amazing rate. You know, since 2019 through 2023, federal spending is up 40%, and through this fiscal year, it's supposed to be up again more than 55%. So we're talking about going from $4.4 trillion to $6.8 trillion in just a matter of 5 years. And that means our deficit this year will be $1.9 trillion. And the interest on the federal debt is now the second biggest line item in our budget. It's the fastest growing part, too, at $982 billion, more than we spend on defense or anything else. So we're really got to get back to a place where we are doing regular appropriations process. We got to work. Chuck Schumer is not having his work. He sits on these bills. He doesn't bring them up to be able to be voted on or amended. And we can also do things like pass a balanced budget amendment or Fiscal State of the Nation Act, which would give a financial report on this stuff, to be able to help us get our hands around this.
Why should states and rural areas be involved?
Well, agriculture is the heart and soul of what we do here in Nebraska, right? It drives our economy. It's 1 in 4 jobs in our state. And it's impacted by all these things we're talking about, whether it's trade or regulation. And this is going to impact Nebraska directly if we don't have a strong agricultural economy. So that's why it was important to really let people know why they need to get involved, that we need to have good policies on this so that we can continue to have a strong economy that creates the jobs for our families.
Farm bill would be obvious, but what are the other priorities for the fourth quarter?
Well, one of the big things we got to do is we got to pass a farm bill. So we've had Senator Bozeman, who's the ranking Republican on the Agricultural Committee in the Senate, come to our state. Senator Fisher and I went around with him. He talked to our farmers and ranchers to understand what's important. And he set out a framework that really does important things for our farmers and ranchers. He continues to have strong crop insurance, conservation programs without strings attached. It's actually doubling the amount of money that we're investing in trade, things like our foreign market development or our market access program, to be able to help expand trade opportunities. And that's actually a really important factor because the Biden-Harris administration has not focused on trade, and we're projected to have a $32 billion trade deficit in agriculture this year. It's only the fourth time in 50 years we've had a trade deficit in this, and it's a record. And it beat last year's record trade deficit of $16 billion, which shows you that this administration really isn't focusing on trade, much less agricultural trade. So these are some of the things we've got to have in a strong farm bill, and we need to get that passed.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
A return to Iowa for the annual Farm Progress Show. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack in his home state with the announcement Wednesday connected to USDA's Fertilizer Production Expansion Program.
We're announcing an additional 7 projects that we're funding in 7 states, an investment of about $35 million in expanded fertilizer capacity.
The program awards grants to help business modernize equipment, adopt new technologies, build production plants, and other methods to improve domestic fertilizer production. Since the creation of FPEP,
we have to date funded 64 projects within this fertilizer initiative, investing $286 million. These projects are located in 32 states.
An expected over 5.6 million tons of increased fertilizer production is estimated through FPEP projects. And according to the secretary,
we have more projects that we're in the process of reviewing from an environmental standpoint, and sure that over the course of the next 2 months or so, we'll be making additional announcements.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington.